Every Tuesday, Postcards helps you reach across borders without actually taking a trip. With Postcards, the world becomes smaller and more connected. Postcards.
Hello and welcome to Postcards, a show which takes you across borders without actually leaving home. I'm Wen Jie. To complement the Harry Potter series, J.K. Rowling has released Pottermore Presents, books which focus on the stories and characters of Hogwarts. But in Britain, Potter fans are already discovering an even darker side to the famous school of witchcraft and wizardry. In the grounds of the castle where the movies were filmed lies a deadly tourist attraction, full of the world's most lethal plants. Here's Nick Lanigan with this postcard from the UK.
It's best known as the home of Hogwarts, a playground for the young Harry Potter in the first two feature films. Alnwick Castle in northeast England was built around 1,000 years ago following the Norman Conquest. Today it's home to the Duke and Duchess of Northumberland, who open it up to Potter fans and visitors. But it's outside the castle walls that people have discovered an even darker and more mysterious side. A place where visitors risk death if they stop and smell the flowers. Behind these gates lies the Poison Garden. It's home to around 100 different species of deadly and intoxicating plants. Regular-looking flowers like Arum maculatum, also known as lords and ladies, have berries which can make you very sick or even die. Chewing on the roots of Phytalacia echosandra releases a slow-acting poison that can have disastrous effects on animals and humans. And it's not just poison ivy you have to be careful of. Common ivy can also lead some sensitive people down the wrong garden path. Alnwick head gardener Trevor Jones says most visitors here are filled with a mixture of dread and fascination.
We have a whole collection of plants, many of which are fatal. So before you ever enter the poison garden, you're told not to touch, not to smell, not to stand too near the plants, because they all have the ability to kill you.
While many of the plants look harmless, they all have a toxic legacy. Opium poppies sit alongside plants like deadly nightshade. It contains the lethal compound atropine, which was commonly used in Agatha Christie novels. Other shrubs are even more lethal, according to Jones.
I would say the most deadly is Ricinus communis, because from that you can extract the deadly poison ricin, of which there's no known antidote. But there are lots of other really good poisonous plants, again, very, very common, such as Atropa belladonna, which is a native plant to the UK. It's often called the deadly nightshade, but it will produce black berries, which look like very sweet-looking grapes, and three of those are enough to kill a child.
Because of the dangerous nature of the garden, it is under guard 24 hours a day and operates with a special license. Visitor numbers are restricted to groups of around 20, and a guide must be present at all times. The Duchess of Northumberland created the garden in 2004 with the idea of educating people. Guides teach people about the science, myths, and infamy of deadly and intoxicating plants, much like a herbology class at Hogwarts. Visitor Kate Fessas says she didn't realise some everyday-looking plants were so dangerous.
Well, it was really interesting. I was shocked, actually, at how harmful some of the plants could be. The children were good as well. They found it very interesting, and I think it's quite educational for them to know exactly what's in the back garden.
The most dangerous and illegal plants are grown inside metal cages to stop people taking samples, including marijuana plants. Marijuana and other narcotics are grown as part of a UK Home Office programme to warn teenagers about the perils of drug use. While most people heed the warnings not to touch or smell the plants, it can still sometimes get a bit too much for some visitors, according to Jones.
The guides are so good that they build up this drama that by the time people get to the end of the tour, they're almost petrified. So it's mainly old ladies, actually, that tend to collapse. Some people have thought that it's a particular plant with perhaps a scent that comes off the plant, but I've never experienced that. I just think people get hyped up about it.
While the mandrakes here don't scream, many of the plants can be used in potions and medicines that wouldn't be out of place for a boy wizard.
Big Harry Potter fans, yeah. So, yeah, it all added to the magic of the garden, I think, for the children, definitely.
Because of the garden's growing popularity, there are plans to expand it further.
You're listening to Postcards, a weekly program on events and life stories taking place in different parts of the world. You can listen to our show at newsplusradio.cn. Lifeguards on a Spanish beach are using a specially adapted drone to help them get help to people in distress. The high-speed drone is equipped with a float that it can drop into the water close to swimmers while sending back live video footage of the situation unfolding. Here's Doris Wan with this postcard from Spain.
Beachgoers in Cunet in the northeastern region of Catalonia in Spain have a new lifeguard. And here it is, a float-equipped drone. Cunet is one of several coastal villages in Spain that are testing drones for beach rescue operations. It is the first village in the country to permanently adopt a surveillance and emergency scheme using the drone. The drone's three batteries allow for up to 1 hour of flight. It can reach a speed of 70 kilometers per hour. The idea came from local policeman Daniel Olemo, who handcrafted a float adapted to the special characteristics of the drone.
Many companies have asked me what I have done to the drone. I haven't done anything to the drone. I just saw the features that the drone already had, and I adapted the float to these features.
Olemo had to strike a difficult balance between aerodynamics and buoyancy to create a float, which can hold up to 3 people in the sea. The design is a work in progress, but tests so far have been very positive.
During the last drill we performed, the drone flew 1.5 kilometers out to sea, dropped off the float exactly where we wanted. It watched the situation until the boat arrived and then came back.
Similar drones are already available, but according to Olemo, his project has the advantage that it is equipped with a small high-speed camera, which allows for longer distance operations where the pilot may not have the person in trouble in direct sight. He says other drones which come with a pre-installed float from the workshop are usually heavier and allow only for operations where the pilot can directly see the person in the sea. The lifeguard drone now has the full backing of the government rescue and emergencies team for the area. In 2015, an 84-year-old swimmer died in waters off Cunet's beach. A lifeguard jumped into the water after reports of a person in distress, only to find when he reached the spot that there were 2 people that needed help. He was only able to help one. The tragedy urged the civil protection authorities to make the decision to go forward with the drone project. Now the drone goes into action the moment a distress call is sounded. It will head directly to the person in danger and provide live images to help lifeguards and rescue operators make decisions about the rescue. Vincent Luna is the chief of the government rescue and emergencies team in Cunet.
Now, from the very moment that any lifeguard warns us of any incident, the drone takes off immediately, just at the same time as the lifeguard, and goes to the point of the emergency. From then on, we can make an informed decision because we really know from minute one what situation we've got. So that's how I came to think that this was a good project, a good idea, and that we needed to make it work.
On the beach, the idea is proving popular.
There are many children on this beach. The water invites you to go very far away and people aren't afraid. That's why I think the drone can be a very positive solution.
Me parece una idea muy buena. Estupenda, porque si puede salvar vidas.
I think it's a really good idea. Everything that can be used to save lives looks fantastic to me.
Olemo's design has captured the attention of various companies and local governments in Spain. Malaga Drone Tech has already expressed an interest in applying Olemo's design to their existing drones. The company wants to introduce surveillance drones along the southern coast of Malaga from next summer.
Technology has made the world a smaller place, but there is still so much we do not know. Every week, Postcards takes you on a trip of exploration and discovery. From a small village in Afghanistan to a protected cultural heritage site in South America. From Africa's amazing natural landscapes to the most advanced tech displays in the world, Postcards. Where you meet the world without actually taking a trip. Postcards.
You're listening to Postcards, a weekly program on events and life stories taking place in different parts of the world. You can listen to our show at newsplusradio.cn. A must-see attraction can be found in the forests of real estate. A tiny creature that was once nearly extinct has bounced back from the brink and is filling the rainforest with its shrill cries once again. Here's Spencer Music with this postcard from Brazil.
This little monkey has survived near extinction. The golden lion tamarin makes its home in Silva Jardim, just 70 kilometers from the bustle of Rio. The tiny flaming orange monkey crouches on a tree branch, making high-pitched whistles and yaps, cautiously greeting other tamarins in the forest. That the cries of Brazil's endangered golden lion tamarin should fill the air at all is a cause for celebration, the result of one of the world's most inspired species restoration efforts. The wild population of golden lion tamarins is now around 3,200. In the 1990s, there were only 150 in Brazil's Atlantic rainforest. For centuries, the little golden monkeys have been exported as pets and as exhibits in zoos around the world. Today, Rio State is the only place in the world where the tamarins live in the wild. The first push to save them began in the early 1970s when a Brazilian researcher found their once teeming numbers dwindling as cities and farms ate into the forest. Once the alarm was sounded, researchers in Brazil and abroad began working together on a labor of love that would take decades. Their first goal, learning how to encourage the monkeys to mate. The rescuers then turned to their most challenging task, reviving the forest, which covers Brazil's most populated region, and gradually reintroducing the monkey into the wild. The Poco das Antas Biological Reserve in Rio State was set up to preserve the tamarin's habitat. It provides the most stringent form of protection possible, setting aside public land to be used only for research and education. Groups of visitors not exceeding 20 people are encouraged to visit the golden lion tamarins at the preserved forest within the grounds of a cattle farm 2 hours away from the city of Rio. After walking across a field, the group enters a forest path led by a guide equipped with a radio detector, which is capable of locating the monkeys, some of which have been equipped with radio collars. Oberlin Cabral Jr. works for the Golden Lion Tamarin Association as a specialist guide. He explains the defensive stances of the males.
The function of these individuals is just that. They're guarding the area, vigilantly protecting their family.
Timo Morrison, a tourist from Holland, says he thinks ecotourism projects like this one are a good idea.
The efforts they are putting into with the local landowners. So I think it's also a good way to contribute as a tourist to spend some money and which benefits the monkey in a certain way. So that's, I think, a very good way. And that's also what the guys telling us about this morning, how they helped to preserve the monkeys.
In 1983, researchers started introducing the golden monkeys into the wild, only to watch with heartbreak as the naive zoo-bred animals met tragic deaths because they failed to recognize panthers and other predators or find shelter or food. 3 decades later, the population has multiplied in all of Rio State, with each Tamarin an expert identifying the 150 types of fruits, berries, shoots, and insects on which it can survive. When the reserve began in 1974, roughly 100 tamarins lived in the area. Now there are 250. Tamarins live in family groups of up to 8 members, including 1 or 2 adult males, 1 reproductive female, and up to 3 young monkeys. They are believed to be monogamous. Visits to the reserve include the right to take photographs of the monkeys. Tourist Charles Avinjo is impressed by their beauty.
We're looking at the world's most beautiful primate. A little bit sad that the marmosets have invaded their territory. They're not native to here, these marmosets. But the tamarins, clearly something maybe everybody should experience, just to see perhaps our ancestors from, you know, that still live. And again, they're just so beautiful.
2 other species of monkey, varieties of marmosets, have also established themselves in the forest and compete with the tamarins. As a part of the visit, tourists can spend part of the day getting acquainted with the local country life. At the Corridos Farm, an old mill made for coffee grinding is an example of a local primitive technology. Here, Brazil's main staple food, manioc, is freshly harvested and is a part of the food offered to visitors in its various forms. This farm, like many others around here, has committed itself to the permanent preservation of forest areas to serve as home for the growing monkey population. Luis Paulo Ferraz is the executive secretary of the Golden Lion Tamarin Association.
A gente quer que o ecotourismo contribua também.
We want ecotourism to also contribute towards regional development so that families who live here may also make a living, develop economic activities related to the protection of nature.
By promoting activities like these, conservationists want to encourage more and more farmers to preserve the remaining patches of forest and to build corridors to link them, increasing the area where these monkeys can survive and continue to grow their populations. Brazil's coastal Atlantic forest is one of the world's biodiversity hotspots. About 2,200 different birds, mammals, reptiles, and amphibians, including 60% of the country's threatened species, make their home in this jungle, one of the most diverse ecosystems on the planet and also one of the most threatened. The monkey is an umbrella species whose protection ensures that dozens of other species in the region have a chance at survival, including the endangered manned three-toed sloth and the woolly spider monkey.
You're listening to Postcards, a weekly program on events and life stories taking place in different parts of the world. You can listen to our show at newsplusradio.cn.
Artists and musicians have long complained about a lack of good facility in the Cambodian capital of Phnom Penh. Now a novel solution to the problem has been found in the form of a rusting old ship that will become a major new artist studio and exhibition space. Before we come to the end of today's show, I would like to share with you an extra postcard from Cambodia. On the banks of the Tonle Sap River in the heart of Phnom Penh sits a rust-red ship, 6 stories high, covering around 6,000 square meters. With its dilapidated look, you might think it's an eyesore, but it is this space that will be transformed into Cambodia's largest creative center dedicated to the contemporary arts. Originally built to be a floating hotel, the structure was left unfinished by its French-Cambodian owner in 2012 before being leased to its current operators. To access the boat, visitors take a smaller vessel downriver before climbing through an opening in the hull. Inside, the ship still feels like an abandoned floating hotel mixed with lots of dust. The Floating Art Center is the brainchild of hotelier Alexis de Schurman and Dana Langua, creator and director of prominent local art gallery Java Arts. Langua says lack of space in Cambodia is pushing artists to leave the country.
One of the challenges that we do face a lot in Cambodia, as I mentioned before, is the lack of space. And because of that lack of space, what happens is that a lot of artists exhibit abroad. They end up in, which is wonderful, they end up in museums and other biennales and other great events. But unfortunately, that kind of takes away from this energy that's bubbling up here in Cambodia and that I've certainly been a witness and a part of in the last 15 years. So it's trying to canonize all that energy and bringing it into one space so that we can really push things forward and bringing in all that talent and that creativity into a creative hub, essentially.
The fifth and sixth floors were already the closest to completion and will be open first as a dance studio and the main exhibition space. The lower four floors are still derelict and will be open floor by floor when funds become available. The group plans to run the Art Center as a non-profit social enterprise, hosting a diverse array of artists on board and funding daily operations through commercial activities and special events. Alexis de Schurman says once the restoration is complete, it will be home to more than 100 mostly local artists, making it Cambodia's biggest art center.
So this is the condition in which we took over the boat. You see a lot of construction materials. There's a lot of rubbish everywhere. Now we will start to clean up all this and continue the refurbishing and get ready to accommodate about 100 artists. We have that many studios. We are ready to start work on the exhibition space and other construction projects within the next 3 months to be ready to open in 1 year's time.
The guest rooms that line the boat's hallways will become living studios, giving artists a place to work and a better opportunity to network and collaborate with each other.
Here, we're inside a room that was supposed to be a bedroom on a boat with a terrace, a balcony, and with a bathroom to make it comfortable to stay. This is the kind of space we want to give to artists to live and work in, to produce here, so we can create a lively community of artists working here.
Furniture still fills some floors, and unwrapped air conditioning units remain in the rooms. But soon, the organizers hope to welcome the first artists into these rooms. For local artists like Than Sothia, a better workspace and the opportunity to more easily network and collaborate with other artists are the main advantages promised by the boat.
I like this space because of the light, the nice views, and the fresh air, which I think will help me concentrate better on my work. And my space will be private, and it will allow me to more easily share my ideas with friends, and we can help each other, and we can also share ideas with artists from around the world. So it's a big opportunity for Cambodian artists. I think many of them will be interested in this kind of space. It's really a dream come true.
With that, we wrap up today's postcards. Your comments, suggestions, or questions are always appreciated. And you can contact us via email at postcards@cri.com.cn. For program producer Zhao Jianfu, I'm Wen Jie. See you next week.